Cannabis Consumers for Liberty. The world, as we have created it, is a process of our thinking. It cannot be changed without changing our thinking. Albert Einstein. Tubs full of dirty dishes were filled from the tables of truckers and families and working men and travelers of all kinds, rich and poor. They opened the dual glass doors, plopped down into a booth or at a table, and ordered their meals. The line cooks pulled from the prep cook tubs, freezers and refrigerators in a whirl, sizzling and popping as they cooked the food. Ding! Order up, they'd yell to summon the waitresses, who buzzed in, out, around, and through the restaurant, between smoke breaks, their leather-like faces and sunken eyes reflecting the hard roads they'd come. The plates would come down from big round trays like culinary flying saucers, landing in front of road-weary and hungry patrons. The children could rarely finish a meal, and large women would leave food in an apparent campaign to convince themselves and the world that the heft was glandular. After they left, everything on the table was hastily bulldozed into a bussing tub, the sound of glass, ceramic, and steel clashing. Waitresses would poke their heads around the corner of the dishwasher, bellowing, "Bust some of these tables!" Without hesitation, the dishwasher was expected to retrieve and carry the tubs back to the kitchen through the double doors after yelling, "Corner!" to alert all to the presence of the important cargo coming back to the kitchen for recycling. The tubs were thrown on steel table, side by side, dripping with discarded food and drinks, ice, water, condiments, and ashtrays full of post-meal stogies. The restaurant had a smoking and non-smoking section, but they were in the same room. The dishwasher, that's me, would hustle to the other side of the table and start the process of washing the dishes by pulling each item from the bin and rinsing it. Flying J provided gloves, but they just slowed us down during the busy periods when clean dishes were at a premium and the entire restaurant of 20 tables turned over about every half hour. My hands turned into washed-out prunes, and my nerve endings felt more exposed and sensitive to the texture of the cigarette ashes mixed with orange juice covering my hands as my nails scraped against the porcelain and steel and glass. Every bussing bin emptied put more food, ice, and water into the trash can strategically, located under a 10-inch hole in the stainless steel table. The dishes were placed on a big plastic tray and sent through an industrial dishwasher before being restacked for reuse so that the process could be repeated over and over and over and over and over. Sometime around midnight, working a double, the trash was full and bloated. I reeked from the various bits of food, tobacco, orange juice, and other stuff stuck to my apron, arms, face, pants, and shoes. I stood up, sauntered to the can, pulled it from under the counter, and lifted it onto a cart. My shoes and the floor were covered in funk and cooking oil as I sauntered, strafed, and slipped behind the cart like a hockey player on slushy ice. I made my way out to the dumpsters out back, took a deep breath, and wrenched the can upward toward the lip of the dumpster. One of the handles caught the lip of the dumpster, and as I bent and lifted from the bottom of the can, I felt a popping sensation between my shoulder blades and a stinging tingling like I hit a funny bone in my back. The top of the trash can pierced the event horizon of the dumpster, and the slop made a terrific sound as it evacuated itself and the air was sucked and displaced through all of that trash and food and water. The large plastic industrial waste can was overflowing with water, ice, food, juice, oils, anything that you can imagine in that kitchen. At first, my back wasn't painful, but after I returned to the dish room, I could barely stand. I asked my boss if I could go home. He said I should stay and finish my double shift. I made it another 30 minutes before the pain was too much to bear, and I had to drive myself home. The next morning, I could hardly move. Sneezing brought the most acute pain I've ever experienced. Breathing brought pain. Everything brought pain. supporting ligaments were torn, and as they healed, some nerve damage formed around the spine next to a new curve between my shoulder blades. After 3 weeks in bed and some chiropractic therapy, I worked and I healed. Since then, the injury has recurred 3 times seriously and several times annually. Most mornings when I get up, I'm reminded of that night as I have to work out the pain between my shoulder blades before I move too fast or too far. The injury didn't completely disable me. I have been able to function riding bicycles and hiking and even lifting weights, but I always felt that I could not be trusted with a job doing more manual labor for fear of re-injuring my back in the same place and leaving my team stranded or short-handed, then having to file a workman's comp claim against my boss's company. The injuries recurred many times since that original graveyard shift at Flying J, once by holding in a sneeze. Years after that experience, I sought out and used cannabis, smoking unfortunately, to help manage my back pain. Because of the injury, I pursued jobs where the work was thinking, not lifting. I found cannabis immediately dulled the throbbing and aching of my back for several days, allowing me to work writing software. It gave me more focus and clarity to do a better job thinking. For anyone who was a cannabis user in the 1990s in America, you can probably relate to how it feels. At first, a stinging sensation enters the mouth, throat, and lungs as heated air, tar, benzene, naphthalene, acrylamide, acrylonitrile metabolites, and vaporized essential cannabis oils make their way into the respiratory tract. Cannabis smoke is thought by researchers to have fewer carcinogens than tobacco, but smoking anything can't be good for a person. So why do people smoke cannabis? As the essential oils of the cannabis make their way into the bloodstream, the pain from smoking first triggers a response of natural painkillers, where some of the reported euphoria after smoking cannabis originates. That being said, since my injury, cannabis has proven to be an effective way to manage pain and recovery from injury for my re-injured back. Given my own personal experience with the plant and in considering the various viewpoints of others, I consider the cannabis issue to be tragically misinformed and woefully addressed by most legislative bodies. Many families have been fractured and many lives ruined unjustly. So there's reason for concern. Unfortunately, the barbaric practice of smoking remains the preferred method of ingestion, creating a public health crisis. Dakota War College gave me a platform to make the case for cannabis deprohibition here in South Dakota. Here's that article. It might not come as a surprise that I'm not a supporter of any of the 3 measures attempting to gather signatures to get on the ballot to legalize marijuana in the state. So when John Dale of Cannabis Consumers for Liberty, the group that submitted the first measure, reached out and wanted to make his case for his conservative motivations behind bringing what might be the broadest legalization effort of the 3, I thought it might be interesting reading to allow him to plead his case. And for your reading, that brings us to 5 questions with John Dale, Cannabis Consumers for Liberty. Question number 1. Can you give us a little background on what your measure proposes to do? The Cannabis Consumers for Liberty initiative aims to legalize cannabis, its flower, marijuana, and its fibers, hemp, and oils, CBD, CBG, THC. Our group seeks to undo the prohibition created on the heels of the passage of the 21st Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the deprohibition of alcohol. In years prior, the invention of the decorticator torpedoed the costs of producing hemp pulp for paper production, and after the passage of the 21st Amendment, Harry J. Anslinger had lost a significant portion of his enforcement budget. This convergence of factors gave rise to the anti-cannabis lobby, consisting of the U.S. Timber Lobby and rent-taking T-men seeking expanded federal government power. Cannabis was subsequently prohibited with the effect of creating a government-sponsored advantage for the timber industry and to give T-men operating money to continue the persecution of cannabis and alcohol black marketeers. The 21st Amendment was ratified by the requisite number of states on December 5, 1933. The first serious regulation of cannabis came with the Marijuana Tax Act, enacted August 2, 1937, on the heels of the 1936 propaganda film Reefer Madness, an intellectually dishonest portrayal of the effects of cannabis use on teenagers. For the record, evidence of cannabis use in human culture was first discovered to be in the archaeological record some 8,000 years ago. Question number two. You've noted to me that there are conservative motivations behind bringing the ballot measure. Can you explain why you believe it to be in line with conservative values? Prohibition of a plant put on earth by God for human use is a violation of an eons-old moral order. The destruction of the long-standing custom of using cannabis for social, industrial, and food is an affront to conservative sensibilities. We stand on the shoulders of those who came before us who used cannabis to cross the seas, clothe themselves, and draft the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Constitution is written on hemp parchment. I'm going to put an author note in here as I'm reading this. That is actually not correct. The Constitution is written, I believe, on the skin of an animal, possibly a sheep. However, drafts of the U.S. Constitution were written on hemp parchment. Betsy Ross is thought to have made the first U.S. flag out of cannabis fiber. That an unelected bureaucracy, the FDA, bans the substance upon which the U.S. Constitution was written and drafted is a direct offense to the conservative principles of this country. Allowing cannabis production and use in a free and fair market without government-sponsored monopolies is prudent. Government-sponsored monopolies through prohibition and regulation degrade variety and dynamism in the marketplace. Monopolistic black market forces dishonestly flag cannabis as a poison to empower black market forces to control means of production and artificially inflate prices. Prohibition of things posing no present danger to society is a failed and sordid attempt to create social utopia through totalitarian mandate to usurp human agency, create mindless followers, and harden an unmeritorious social hierarchy. Prohibition of things like cannabis undermines the notion that people own their own bodies. A person's own body is her property, and property rights are fundamental to conservatism. Cannabis legalization is a matter for localities to decide through their patronage of markets. Yet, an unelected bureaucracy has imposed prohibition on the entire country through the misscheduling of cannabis, a raw material input for textiles, manufacturing, medicine, and a mild intoxicant, the same as heroin, an addictive and dangerous poison. Conservatives believe in the restraint of power of our government. Allowing the FDA to prohibit cannabis use within domestic free and fair markets is an egregious affront to the conservatives' desire for prudent restraints on the power of government and top-down communalization of our municipalities. The fact that meth can be legally prescribed by a doctor while cannabis remains illegal, even for textiles and medicine, is a great example of why we should limit government and rely more on the wisdom of markets. With the stroke of a pen, the government of the United States has regulated out of the economy a valuable resource of raw materials for textiles, a viable and attainable source of medicine, and a viable alternative to alcohol as an intoxicant, cannabis. The prohibition of cannabis is ergo orthogonal to conservative principles. Question 3. There are now three initiated measures, constitutional amendments, being proposed for the 2020 ballot, which involve the legalization of marijuana. Why is your proposal better than the other two? Of the three proposals on the table right now, ours is the only proposal that significantly reduces government bureaucracy and takes out the black market. Our proposal is functional, meaning it defines the spirit and intent of the legal ideology while empowering the legislature to do the job of backing out the litany of spaghetti-like codified cannabis law. At the same time, the functional nature of our proposal gives courts the ability to cogently interpret the plethora of possible legal challenges to the law without consuming more space in the state's legal code book. Most important, the CC4L initiative is the only one of our four options that disempowers the black market. I say four because all indications are that the black market will thrive if one, we do nothing, or two, we pass and enact the other two initiatives. In the medicinal initiative under consideration right now, the legal defense clause will be used as a sales tool to sell legions of non-medicinal users. In the non-CC4L legalization initiative, police will lose probable cause to investigate users who will obtain from black marketeers to avoid dispensary-based surveillance. The CC4L initiative was designed to take out the black market, bringing all those criminals into the light and encouraging them to obtain competitive advantage through customer service, product development, and intellectual property. Those businesses not able to achieve competitive advantage through these and other legitimate and legal means will be banished from the market via customer choice. Question number four. The Attorney General's opinion of your ballot measure gives the appearance that your ballot measure sets up marijuana to be treated like alcohol in terms of possession for those over 21. Yet, it notes that localities can't tax marijuana or paraphernalia, despite being on the front line for dealing with those that would be abusing it. Counties argue with the state for a bigger portion of taxation of alcohol for this reason. Why would this be different? Not allowing persecution through taxation and localized municipal controls is direct adherence to conservative principles. In a free and fair market, if there is no demand for cannabis, a business will not subsist. If the culture of an area is such that cannabis is not used or demanded, there will be no market, no cannabis production, no cannabis consumption, and no cannabis businesses or business license applications. For those who wish to create their own personal economies by growing their own cannabis, a municipality should not be allowed to impose totalitarian controls on that person's right to produce cannabis for personal consumption. Section 15 of our proposal is meant to protect conservative cannabis free marketeers from a coordinated totalitarian assault from the reefer madness propagandized opposition who would seek to abort the restoration of a fundamentally conservative human right to produce and consume one of God's most amazing gifts to mankind, cannabis. Question number five. There are only about 7 weeks left until initiated measure petitions are due. Where are you on petition signature collection? Do you anticipate you'll have sufficient signatures to turn in? Regretfully, I must decline to publish specifics regarding our support, since if we have a lot of support, attrition might take hold. If we have dwindling support, apathy might take hold. That said, I will say a word about our process. We've created a database that we use to allow supporters to opt in. When cannabis advocates text keyword reefer to 605-309-7007, it initiates a process of voter registration verification. When we have enough verified voters in our database, we need around 18 days to collect all of our signatures using software routines that optimize our efforts using the geographic information contained in voter registration data, along with our ability to communicate directly with our supporters in real time. Our referral network is growing quickly, and support for our cause increases exponentially as word spreads about our authentic, conservative-minded civic engagement. I'm not sure why you think cannabis has been prohibited, but let's explore why I think it has been prohibited. A grain-binding innovation called the decorticator threatened the timber industry, who lobbied heavily against cannabis to reduce competition. Cannabis patients report positive cannabis medicinal value for AIDS, HIV, Alzheimer's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, fibromyalgia, glaucoma, inflammatory bowel disease, Parkinson's disease, and many other conditions, making cannabis a threat to the pharmaceutical industry who lobbies actively to reduce competition. Marijuana, the dried flower of the cannabis plant, contains demonstrably safer recreational properties that are shown safer than alcohol and tobacco, making cannabis a threat to the alcohol and tobacco industries as an alternative intoxicant, enticing opposition lobby from bar owners and alcohol manufacturers who seek to stifle competition. pervasive with marijuana use, a burgeoning southwestern undocumented Latin American population became the target of federal drug enforcement after alcohol prohibition was repealed, inciting drug enforcement at the federal level to take rent through selective prosecution of undocumented Latin American immigrants. It is presently legal to import value-add hemp products from other countries into the United States, like wallets and garments, but it is illegal to produce the raw material required to produce those same goods domestically. The enforcement of cannabis crimes is overkill and creates widespread damage to good Americans by criminalizing victimless cannabis-related activities. Bar owners, medical investors, doctors, unions, big timber, big tobacco, and others lobby to make competitive advantages for their industries and other firms. Cannabis is disruptive to all of these industries and more, making it an irresistible investment in the majority of U.S. states. With free markets and proper marketing, cannabis would easily outcompete many of the alternative products offered from these industries. Law is a neglected subject in public school. In our home school, the opportunity to address a deficiency in the public school system motivates us. The legal system eludes many schools in the U.S. It's a big subject. But picking a project with a known timeline creates natural boundaries and limitations on scope. In our case, we wanted to research the breadth of cannabis prohibition in South Dakota through the initiative process with help from, and much credit to, the South Dakota Secretary of State and Legislative Research Council. In South Dakota, the Citizens Initiative, giving citizens the power to initiate law through the petition and ballot box, was the first of its kind in America. I decided to do something controversial, cannabis legalization, having the proven high ground on the issue of prohibition of cannabis in America. In our school, we studied the current laws, examined the logic and the legal language of the laws, and our petition, learned about the petition process and voter registration. We interacted with the wonderful people in the Secretary of State's office, with the Legislative Research Council, and we got our Attorney General's statement back. Amazingly, our petitions were dramatic in terms of how they reduced the wasted money here in South Dakota. As a homeschool, we found the extent of codified law regulating cannabis to be astounding. With appropriate help from various parties, we crafted a petition to remove all of the cannabis law on the books in South Dakota. We knew our petition would never be affected. The purpose was to teach our kids about the syntax of legislation, the process of the South Dakota statewide initiative petition, and to create conversation between our students and representatives and agents of the state of South Dakota. Civic duty. The enormity of the government intrusion was clearly demonstrated in the size of the petition. Our petition was approved for circulation by the Secretary of State, and the Attorney General wrote an official opinion on our petition. For a small government state, South Dakota had a great opportunity in cannabis to trim up and meet those expectations. While people were scoffing at the size of our petition and how we'd never legalize weed in South Dakota, our homeschool stayed focused on our mission of understanding the process of our government through an issue. The question posed was, how could such a big body of law be addressed through citizens' initiative? The answer was to be more functional in the design of our legislation to cover unnamed law. As such, our homeschool's second petition submittal was much shorter to review and use language to obviate all cannabis state law without having to write it all out explicitly. The Attorney General's statement in cost impacts for South Dakota took our breath away. In 2020, despite some questions about the integrity of the ballot boxes in South Dakota, a medicinal cannabis program was approved by popular vote on a citizens' initiative, destroying the myth and the stigma that conservatism and cannabis cannot make good bedfellows. Now, as a population under immense pressure struggling with addiction is introduced to the essential oils of cannabis, care must be taken to understand those effects, correctly attribute the problems. Prolonged psychological trauma, alcohol, meth, and opioids are all more significant contributing factors and nearly always present when problems occur. As a homeschool, our efforts were a resounding success. Although we did not have funding injected into our initiatives and our petitions, did not make it onto the ballot, the learning process was invaluable. Additionally, I think that our work inspired others to look at the issue more closely and to reconsider old, stale, entrenched, self-fulfilling beliefs about cannabis advocates. I often wonder how many were inspired by our cannabis law related to homeschool projects. Heck, I'm sure we had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that it passed.